Everybody's attention. We're going to go ahead and start. I know folks are still getting their lunches, but we kind of have a strict timeline today. I'm Charisse Millett. I am a co-chair of House Energy along with Representative Doug Isaacson. So we wanted to welcome you to our first Lunch and Learn. And today I'm so happy to have Marilyn Leland here. She is the executive director of the Alaska Power Association, and she's going to have many presenters today talk about energy in Alaska and what it takes to energize Alaska. So with that, Marilyn, who does a fantastic job, who should get a raise, who is one of my favorite people in the energy industry that's taught me so much in the last 5 years, I really appreciate it. So Marilyn, with that, thank you for being here.
And I taught you well on what to say to introduce me too, didn't I? Yeah. So I'm Marilyn Leland. I'm the executive director of Alaska Power Association. And Alaska Power is the statewide trade association for the electric utilities around the state. Our members are everywhere from Barrow, Western Alaska, down through South Central, down to Southeast and the interior. And the way I describe it is our members provide power to more than 500,000 Alaskans. So most Alaskans get power from our members. This week we've got meetings of our managers from around the state, and this is the first time that we've done a Lunch and Learn, so we're real excited about this and happy to be here. And what I want to do, I'm going to just introduce Clay Copeland. I'm not sure where Clay went. Oh, he's right there. I couldn't see you. Too close. Clay is one of the co-chairs of the managers forum, and he is the CEO of Cordova Electric. And then the other co-chair is Brad Evans, who is the CEO of Chugach Electric, and Brad's going to get us started here.
Thank you, Marilyn. And first, thank you for sponsoring our first Lunch and Learn, and thank you everybody for coming. Is it on? Is there a light? Good to go. I guess I just need to speak louder. But today we've got presentations from various managers across the state, so we're going to give you a cross-section of the state and what's happened in each one of those regions. The way we've divided the state up really is based along the way the AEA kept statistics. You could divide the state up in many different ways, so we don't want you to think that we're proposing the state be divided up this way, but we took regional areas and had a CEO from each one of the regional areas speak to that. And today we wanted to talk about our relationship with the legislative body and the benefits that they flow to us working with the utilities. A lot of times we come down here and we only talk about problems. But there has been a lot of success, and we want to reassure you that a lot of the help that you've given us has gone a long ways, and each person will speak to some of those benefits, so we want to encourage that going forward. After that, we'll wrap that up with a Q&A and invite people to stick around after the formal Q&A and talk to some of the regional managers. With that, I'll call up our first speaker for regional area, which is Tim McLeod. And most of you should know Tim. He's your local guy.
Thank you, Brad. I'm going to stick to my notes here to keep us on schedule the best I can. As you can see, we're going to talk a little bit about Southeast and the kind of the layout of the Southeast. You can see there's about a little over 41,000 electric accounts in Southeast. It's primarily hydro or diesel. We've looked at many other alternatives out there, but hydro is by far the best, and really the second runner-up is diesel in most cases for production in Southeast. And most of Southeast is a group of isolated communities. There's very, very little interconnections in Southeast, and the only segments that are isolated from the rest of the Southeast. So, for example, we have an intertie, Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg are interconnected, but they're not connected to anyone else. So, primarily isolated, and that's primarily due to the geography of interconnecting. Interconnecting communities requires long, expensive submarine cables, and those have not proved to be economically feasible. Submarine cables are not only expensive, but they have a finite life, and they will fail, and in most cases they can't be repaired. They have to be completely replaced, so they're not necessarily the best alternative. And as a result, the utilities in Southeast end up with a little bit higher rates because there's no redundancy. We all have to supply our own backup generation and so forth, and we can't share facilities as though if we were interconnected. And space heating, thermal heating, has become an issue in Southeast. Hydro projects inflate until you build them. So unlike fossil fuel, where you have a fuel that continues to inflate, once a hydro project is constructed, it's pretty stable from there on. And so over time, diesel fuel has inflated to the point that space heating is pretty comparable in cost to our old hydro projects that we have in some of the communities around here. So in areas like Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, those areas have old hydro. And so now we have diesel fuel or heating fuel at about the same cost for space heating as those hydro projects. And that's led to a tendency for new homes to be constructed with all-electric heating. And as a result, new hydro needs to be built, and new hydro is expensive. And so that drives the cost of electricity up for everyone. And the alternative is supplementing with diesel fuel, and that's, again, not a good alternative. And what we don't want to see is we don't want to see these 80% efficient oil heating systems converted over to diesel, where we make that energy with 30% efficient diesel generators. So we don't encourage thermal heating, and we do have a limited capacity on hydro systems out there. So talk a little bit about state energy legislative actions that have benefited the communities. Formation and funding of the Foreign Dam Pool was, to me, one of the great success stories in the state. That resulted in the construction of four hydro projects that really benefit six communities, and those communities will benefit from those hydro projects indefinitely. Three of those communities are right here in Southeast, the Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell. State programs that have really been a benefit are the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and that has kicked off a lot of good projects that would otherwise never get off the ground. So real happy to see that program, and as several of the communities here in Southeast are benefiting from that program. And of course, the power cost equalization program, everyone knows the value of that. There's a lot of communities out there that don't have alternatives other than diesel right now, and it's the lowest cost alternative, and they've got to have benefit by subsidizing with the cost, power cost equalization. So that's been a great program. Appropriations. A couple of years ago, the state funded a Southeast Integrated Resource Plan so that all of Southeast was under one plan. We had one plan so that we weren't going to the legislature with all kinds of different priorities. So I think that by having the state take on that plan for us, I think was a great benefit. Another appropriation was the Greens Creek Mine. Now, that was not a state appropriation, that was a federal appropriation, but I wanted to leave that in there because it's a perfect example of a project that was grant-funded that could have never been built without grant funds, and the benefits are tremendous. It allowed us to be able to build the Lake Dorothy Hydro Project with the least amount of impact to our customers. And it benefits our community $6 to $7 million a year. So we took a $15 million federal grant and converted that to a tremendous benefit to Juneau. Another project is the Blue Lake Hydro Project. It's our least cost energy project for Sitka, and it's an expensive one. And I don't believe they could build that without some grant funds from the state. And so Sitka could ultimately end up a diesel community, a diesel generation community, if this project wasn't constructed. So I think that's been a tremendous benefit. And then the Swan Lake Tyee project that was constructed a few years ago allows SEPA to optimize the power production between the Ketchikan, Pierceburg, and Wrangell area. So I think that's been a big benefit. Then this last slide is just a avalanche diversion structure. That's one of the few state grants that Alaska Electric Light and Power has received, and we got $2 million of state funding towards an $8 million project to build some of these avalanche diversion structures. So we've improved the reliability of the Snettisham Hydro project by developing and constructing these avalanche diverters. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Clay Copeland of Cordova.
Hey, thanks, Tim. Well, we're neighbors to Southeast, and there's a lot of similarity. And in fact, in our region, there's kind of a dry side of the mountains and the wet side of the mountains. So we have feast and famine with hydro on one side and diesel options on the other side in the case of Copper Valley Electric. Robert Wilkinson at Copper Valley and Darren Scott at Kodiak are both busy lowering the cost of energy, or at least trying to stabilize it and fight the diesel monster in their communities. So I agreed to step in for them. You'll see a lot of similarities. We face a lot of the same challenges across the regions, so I won't repeat some of the same issues, but the South Central region, which is kind of the Copper River Valley, Glen Allen, Valdez, Cordova, and Kodiak, and the small communities in between, are about 12,000 electric consumers. And the primary generation is hydro, oil, and now especially in Kodiak, wind. Our key energy issues, you heard Tim talk a little bit about the high cost of hydro development. It's that upfront expense that's really challenging. A hydro, once it's built, pays dividends for generations, decades and decades. But getting over that hurdle of getting it permitted and built is very expensive. The high cost of oil, I'll just say in Cordova Electric's case, when we were 100% diesel 10 years ago, it was $1 million of fuel every year. Now at 40% diesel, most of the way to renewable energy, it's $3 million a year. So that's a multiplier of 6 and 10 years, and that is the whole story of electric energy cost in most of our regions. Lack of interconnections. Copper Valley Electric is not connected to the rail belt grid. They're, I think, 35 miles away. Cordova's not connected to Copper Valley. Kodiak's not connected to Copper Valley or Cordova. So we have the same isolation issues that you do in Southeast, where you have to have all this extra generation for when your hydros are down, and you can't sell the extra power when you have it. You can't buy power when you need it. Just the issues that come with isolation. Thermal heating. I tell people in my community, I think in our region in general, in fact, it's a lot worse in Glen Allen, for every $5 I spend on energy, one goes into my car's gas tank, one goes into my electric bill, and three goes into heating my house, a little 1,600 square foot five-star house. So heating is still a big part of our overall energy use. The state has done a lot in our region, and they've done it for quite some time. The other three communities that benefit from the Four Dam Pool are Glen Allen, Valdez, and Kodiak. Now, those projects in Copper Valley's case weren't big enough to actually meet their whole demand, and in 20 years, energy use has changed a lot, so they still have a lot of challenges with fuel and diesel use. House Bill 528 was a debt reimbursement program that actually Cordova Electric, Copper Valley, and Kodiak benefited from. It helped with infrastructure construction, mostly hydro and energy efficiency projects, again, to get the cost of diesel fuel off our back. The Renewable Energy Grant Fund, I think all three utilities, the larger utilities, Kodiak, Copper Valley, and Cordova Electric, have benefited from that program. Cordova Electric was one of the biggest recipients with our Humpback Creek project, and I'll give you some numbers on that here in a minute. Power cost equalization. Now, Copper Valley and Kodiak Electric don't receive power cost equalization. Cordova does. So it does have an impact also on the smaller communities in our region. Even Mir, I think, has a utility in our region in Kodiak. So a lot of haves and have-nots where it comes to diesel fuel generation. Cordova Electric and Kodiak have finished some of our projects. Copper Valley is working on their project. The Allison Creek Hydro, and I want to use a good chunk of my time to give you some numbers and help communicate through those numbers what the success of these projects have been and how valuable the state's investments have been in our local economies. Allison Lake is a $14 million project. Copper Valley hopes to get it 50% grant funded and take out conventional loans to borrow for the other half of that project. It will produce 16 million kilowatt hours of energy. And the total benefit of the project is 23 million kilowatt hours. Sometimes when you build a hydro, in fact, you try to a lot of times, give yourself a little room to expand, a little excess capacity, so that it carries you into the future. So that's a $23 million kilowatt hour project. That's the size of Cordova's whole use. The net benefit of that project is $1.5 million in diesel fuel savings to the members, and that's the difference between diesel and hydro to the members of Copper Valley Electric. So that's a big return on investment for a $14 million project. Kodiak Wind is even a little, and Teakel River is a reconnaissance project that Copper Valley's working on. They've got some state assistance with that. The Pillar Mountain Wind Project, these numbers are just staggering. And they installed 3 megawatt and a half wind turbines in July of 2009. Those turbines and the 3 additional that they installed in September of last year, 27.5 million kilowatt hours of energy. That's offset 3,345,000 gallons of diesel in a year, in basically 2.5 years. $6 million in savings to their members. So amazing return on that investment, and they also got some state assistance with that project. Terror Lake Hydro Project in Kodiak, they're adding a third turbine there that's going to help them maximize their wind and also improve their system stability. Kodiak's also pioneering some battery energy storage that has helped also maximize the amount of wind that they can put in their system and improve their overall power quality, and it's working out really well for them. So the impacts of the state programs and assistance that we've received, we've actually pioneered quite a bit, both in Kodiak and in Cordova, and actually Copper Valley's getting there. We have to find cost-effective ways for our diesel plants to handshake with our hydro plants, especially in Cordova. We're 100% hydro in the summer. It trickles off with our run-of-the-river projects in the winter. We have really highly developed automation systems that really minimize the amount of diesel you use and maximize the amount of hydro you use, and also provides very stable power. In our system, I think we average about 1 to 2 hours of outage for the whole year every year. It's helped us deploy more renewable energy and get more production out of that renewable energy, the state assistance has. It's improved the reliability of our systems. I just mentioned that. In the 15 years I've been at Cordova Electric, we've gone from 15 to 20 hours of outages a year to 1 hour. So there are a lot of benefits beyond just the fuel savings. And it's stabilized prices. I'll tell you, building a hydro doesn't always mean a big rate cut. In fact, if you don't have any assistance, chances are you might even take some rate increases. But what you do is you take that real volatile fuel cost and get it out of your mix. So, you know, just a little expectation management there. Sometimes just keeping your prices stable or taking small increases are a big win. Well, I'll give you a number. If we were 100% hydro at Cordova Electric last year, $14 million in electric bills in our community. We had, even despite one of the worst hydro production years, we paid $8 million in electric bills. So that's the difference between a fishing community that can survive and grow like it has and one that hasn't. And that's the last comment, is the impact on economy. Kodiak and Cordova, two of the 5 largest seafood delivery ports in the U.S. by dollar value. So there's a lot of jobs, a lot of economy that comes with these investments in energy. Thank you, and with that, I'll turn it over to Mira Kohler at ABIC. Corey Borgeson, friend to the North.
Thanks, Clay. Thank you, committee members, and everyone for being here today. My name is Corey Borgeson. I'm president and CEO of Golden Valley Electric. I'm kind of the new kid on the block. I've been at Golden Valley since June of last year, where I've come in having to take a crash course on a number of energy issues to make sure that the area can kind of survive the energy crisis that we have going. I want to kind of tell you that Golden Valley is a cooperative that serves an area that from about the Denali National Park, Cantwell area, all the way through the interior of Fairbanks, North Pole, and then all the way south to Delta Junction. It's it has 265 employees, revenues of about $280 million, and five labor agreements. There's a lot going on. But what's really critical is the cost of energy in the interior, and electric costs are critical. One of the things I learned, first, you think about from a residential user, the average residential user has about a $5 a day electric bill. It's $150 a month. You say, well, that's not very bad. And I say, let's have a campaign that says that's what you spend when you're in line at the latte stand, you know. And our PR partner says, you can't say that, Corey. That's elitist. People, not everyone's in line getting $5 lattes. What really kind of brought home to me is I came on as president CEO. I was invited to one of our biggest customer. And they know I'm telling the story. They said it's okay. And they've got 720 employees. They have $112 million a year they spend on capital. And they said, you know what? Our energy costs are so big here. Our company, a national, international company, says we're going to deploy our capital elsewhere. We can't continue to do business if the energy costs are representing 37% of our cost of doing business. And of course, this is after they treated me really nice, you know, giving me all these little goodies in a goodie bag. You know, they put me in a sweat box there and said, you know, you've got to do something about the energy costs here, or our company is going to not continue to do business and grow in the interior. It's extremely important that we find some solutions. We've got a really good mix of energy in Fairbanks. The coal plant, the Healy Clean Coal Plant, is we're making good progress on that. If you follow it, we've got our consent decree process by which we got our air permits for Healy Clean Coal. And I'm committed, told our board that we're going to have that going by the first quarter of 2015. We're going to have, we think, folks in the plant starting the work in June of this year. Few final things to get done with our financing with the Rural Utility Services, but we're on board to have that coal plant going, and that is going to help the cost of energy in the interior. We've had great help from our sister utilities in Anchorage. We were buying power yesterday from MLMP. Thank you, Jim Posey. Brad Evans from Chugach has gone out and secured a contract with Hillcorp Corporation for gas. It will be for 2 years starting in April of this year. We can't thank Chugach enough for that. But even with that, we're able to buy more power from MLMP. So Jim, keep your gas available for us. But we love competition, don't we? We get gas, but the gas that we have right now is coming from Anchorage, and it's sent to us for electrical consumption over the intertie. So we're very glad to have that. It's a good mix. We're going to talk about wind in a minute. We can go to the next slide then. We talk about our issues and being able to get gas. Gas in the Cook Inlet is important to us in the interior because we get it then it's generated by the utilities in Anchorage. And we're concerned about the lack of commitment from gas in the Cook Inlet and the inability to plan into the future with that. That's very important to us. In fact, it's important enough that we've come up with an idea that we need to get gas to the interior by trucking it from the North Slope. You talk to people about this and they scratch their heads and they say, you've got to be kidding. But when you talk to them, you sit down and explain it, they say, We get it. We understand it. The governor has put into his plan the idea of a liquefaction plant on the North Slope. Golden Valley had put their hands up and said, we'd do it. The governor says, Ada, we'll kind of figure it out. So we're working with Ada. And I'm glad I'm going to let Ada take the risk. It's a big project. The liquefaction plant, we believe, is going to be somewhere around $220 million. The trucks are $30 million. The trailers are $30 million. The regas plant in North Pole is $60 million. It's a big cost. So I'm glad Ada's going to take that risk. But we're working on it. You know, to give you an idea, the heating costs in Fairbanks, Clay was talking about his home. I happened to have a meeting with the governor 6 weeks ago. My heating oil had been delivered the day before. I have a big tank, but I had gotten 700 gallons of heating oil, which will last me about 2.5 months. And the bill was $2,600 and some. And I gave it to the governor, and his staff passed it around. I said, you can keep it, put it in your budget, something like that. But it's dramatic. The idea of heating oil in Fairbanks, they say if you have a 3,000 square foot house, you're going to use 1,500 gallons. And at $4 a gallon, that's $6,000 a year. It's a big cost cost of living in Fairbanks, and you'll hear about that. We can use natural gas, Golden Valley Electric, by burning it in our North Pole expansion plant, which right now we're burning naphtha. So we can lower our cost of electricity if we can truck gas, and we can have the benefits of bringing lower costs to the interior residents by them using natural gas than for home heating. Of course, it requires a build-out of a distribution system. It's not an easy model to get going. It's a chicken and the egg thing. Oh, if we have the gas, then we'll build the distribution, but we can't get the gas here if we don't have the distribution. So I've told I need to wind it up. So anyway, we're working on those issues. One of the things I want to talk to you about is the wind project. The legislators that are here and all staff members that helped give us some state money for our Eva Creek Wind Project. The 12 turbines were put up just a little bit past Denali National Park from here. It was a phenomenal project. It came in on time, basically on time and at cost as expected. It started producing some power in October, really getting going in November and December, finally commissioned all 12 turbines in December. It's operating at this point at a 53% capacity factor, which anyone I heard a while. Of course, it's much higher in the winter. It will drop in the summer, but we're on target. We're ahead of what we expected, and we think on average we're going to have about a 36 to 38% capacity factor, which is still extremely good. 8 million megawatt hours so far produced through December. So we're extremely pleased with that project and how it's worked, and we thank everyone here for the funding that we got for it. We're able to get what they call Krebs financing, which is renewable energy bonds for nonprofits, and our interest rate on the $81 million we had to borrow is only at 1.05%. Big, big benefit to our interior residents. And I'm going to go to the next slide, I think. We're talking, I'd like to spend a little bit of time, that's Eva Creek there in the picture, about the rail belt and the importance of the intertie system. There's been a report that's done by AEA, it's called the Burlingame Report. If you can get it, you should take a look at it. It's a very scary thing. The cost of kind of increasing and producing power throughout the rail belt is going to take a significant amount of dollars and improvements to the intertie. We have a group of rail belt utilities called ARCTEC that is spearheading the grant funding for that. Golden Valley is participating in that, and we think it's extremely important. If the Susitna project is going to come to fruition, we're going to need to get that power to Fairbanks, to the interior. We're going to need to make sure that the rail belt is viable and is reliable enough that we can get firm power over the interior. We need a solution, a long-term solution. The trucking solution that we're talking about is short-term. There's a lot of costs and a lot of effort that needs to be done to make sure that the energy issues for the rail belt are taken care of. And I think there's a good group of utility folks here that are working on it. And with your help, it will happen. Final thing on the trucking project, because I'm going to introduce Miracola from AVEC next. The trucking project, if we truck gas from the North Slope, it's going to produce propane as well. Now, 10,000 gallons a day with a 9B plant. May not seem like a lot, or may, but we think that propane can find its way into the river communities, other areas in the interior beyond the road system in Fairbanks. We've even talked to some of the utilities in Anchorage about if there really is a cooking oil shortage, that maybe we'll be putting some of our LNG on trains all the way south to Anchorage. You won't like the price in Anchorage, though. So anyway, with that, I do want to introduce Mira Kroller from AVEC, who will talk to you about the rural areas of the bush in Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Corey. Well, as you can see, I get the lion's share of the state. So the yellow is what I'm going to talk about today, and this is essentially rural Alaska. We do include the Aleutian chain, the body of Alaska, and you can see that we're probably looking at about 3/4 of the land mass of the state. Despite the huge geographic size of the state, this represents a very large number of very small utilities. Typical utility size is very modest, a couple of hundred meters, basically. But totally, we have just under 25,000 meters in the state. We probably represent about 100,000 of the population of the state of Alaska. Clearly, the predominant fuel source that we use is oil, and it's used not just for the production of electricity, but also for the production of heat. And we are limited to oil because our communities are so distant from each other. It's the only viable technology that we can utilize to generate both electricity and diesel, electricity and heat, I'm sorry. We have made some inroads in the recent past with some renewables. AVEC, for example, we have 55 villages that we serve today. And we have installed a fleet of, we do have the most wind turbines in the state. We have about 34 wind turbines. They're not the largest of the ones in the state. They're the smaller ones. But even though they're only in 12 communities out of about 55, 5% of our production last year was from wind as opposed to diesel. So we are making progress, but we have a long way to go to make a big difference. There is a very small amount of hydro in rural Alaska as well. Primarily in southwest Alaska, there are a few communities that have very small hydro projects. We also have the Tizimina project in Iliamna. So there are a scattering of those, but they are a very modest contribution to the electric needs of these communities. So what are our key issues? Obviously, the key issues that we have distances that are not bridged by electric lines. So all the very small communities have to have their own local generation program. We at AVEC have more than 160 diesel turbines or diesel gensets in our villages. So what we have been very aggressive about is trying to interconnect our villages. We have built a few tie lines in the last 10 years. And the returns from those transmission tie lines are incalculable. They have really proven to be their worth in gold most close enough. The big issue, I think, of the day, Corey mentioned it, it's the same in rural Alaska. Most of the energy that you use in your home or business is used to heat that space. It's not to electrify the space. So about 3/4 of your home energy demand is for heat, not for electricity. So while we have programs that address the issue of electricity, for example, we do have power cost equalization on the first 500 kilowatt hours, there really is no viable program for offsetting the cost of heat. The high cost of oil, we all know that it peaked in 2008, it came down in 2009, but it's right back pretty close to where it was in 2008. Our delivered cost of a gallon of oil last year was a little over $4. The retail cost of oil in our communities that we're talking about today is pretty much at a minimum of $7 a gallon, and it is as high as $12 or $15 a gallon in some communities. And it's a function of the size of the community and the distance that gallon of diesel has to travel to get to them. We have a lot of struggling standalone utilities. They are essentially wards of the state. When you have an issue in a community and they blow a generator in the middle of the winter, guess who's backing them up and flying in that generator and setting it up again? It's the state. So the state has become the de facto super utility for rural Alaska. You really need to take a look at yourselves and see, is that really what we want to be? Is that who we are? We have a lot of contamination around the state because diesel fuel has been the primary source of energy for decades, you have a lot of legacy spills. And so we have a contaminated site issue that needs to be addressed. And right now, I'm not sure that there's any entity that's doing that. We do our own cleanups. I'm not sure who else does. So it's a challenge. And we're going to have larger issues with spill containment and planning programs. The Coast Guard has reared its head many a time, telling us they're going to shut down tank farms. And they have backed off when we've put a little bit of effort into trying to clean those up. The Denali Commission provided a lot of funds to rebuild tank farms. The state has not had a matching program, something that, you know, they're struggling to come up with some money. But it's a challenge because we have to compete with all the other worthy causes. So what has happened in the last 10 years, as far as legislation goes, obviously the state has spearheaded regional energy planning. That's a very good thing because we all have different solutions for different parts of the state. There are active plans underway in the interior as well as in the YK area, southeast Alaska, the rail belt. Everybody's working on regional plans. At some point in time, we have to stitch them all together and make a master plan, but we're not there yet. Hopefully we'll get there soon. The other thing that we have going on is programs that are absolutely critical to our communities, power cost equalization being the very top of those. Everybody else has a renewable energy fund. I will tell you that PCE is more important because it makes the difference in many of these homes for them to be able to put food on the table as well as keep the lights on while they're looking at that food. The Renewable Energy Grant Fund has been fabulous. The legislature has been staunchly in support of that. We really appreciate that. It has allowed us to develop wind systems and other, not just wind systems. We have actually at AVEC put in half a dozen recoverable heat programs. So we are capturing heat and delivering it to local buildings, water treatment plants, schools, et cetera. And the state has made that possible through the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. The state also operates a circuit rider program through the Energy Authority that, again, I mean, it is a little bit like super utility, but having that enables some of these utilities to actually stay functional. In terms of appropriations, in the last couple of years, the state has stepped up to the plate and tried to put some money into bulk fuel upgrades and power system upgrades. It's just a drop in the bucket, and I hope that you'll continue to consider to fund that because that is the resource that we turn to when we need to do something material. We actually have a really long CAPSIS list, and I'm not going to give it to you right now, but we'll be talking about it over time. One of the larger projects that has gotten a little bit of funding in the last year or so is the Chicoominic Lake project, which is a proposed hydro project in southwest Alaska. And I know that Navista Light and Power, which is sort of a paper G&T type organization, is looking to investigate other projects also that could be part of a regional solution. Something I did not put on the slide, but it occurred to me while I was sitting over here, the Emerging Energy Technology Fund has been just a wonderful program that has jump-started and made possible a lot of other projects in the state. So finally, I think my last slide, I'm being told that I have 2 minutes, and I don't want to see when it becomes 1 minute, that's an ugly sight. We have, what has the state accomplished? We have managed to connect some of our communities, and as I said, the returns on that are tremendous. We actually got funding this year from the Rural Utility Service to build tie lines between Equok and Neustrelitz. Bryce, you're going to be pleased about that, and between St. Michael and Stebbins. So we're making progress. We have improved economies of scale by being able to ramp up efficiencies and interconnect communities. We have reduced our oil consumption. That is the goal. We want to reduce oil consumption. The one drop of oil that we are not burning is not putting emissions in the air, and it's not going to spill on the ground either. So that's critical. And we have made tremendous progress in the state on becoming code compliant. So with that, is that the end of my... Okay, so I made it just under the wire, and it is my privilege and pleasure to introduce my neighbor from the farthest north community in our state, and that's Ben Franz. He's the general manager of Barrow Utilities and Electric Co-op, Inc. They do all kinds of wonderful things up there, and he's going to talk not just about the North Slope region, but also the Nana region. So with that, Ben. Thank you.
The Muni Mayor mentioned that is the North Soul Borough. Bear Utilities and Electric Co-op Inc. is a standalone cooperative, not a municipality. We exist in Barrow. We predate the borough by about, 8 years. It'll be our 50th year next month. I am Ben France, manager and CEO of Bear Utilities Electric Inc. We are a multi-utility. We provide electricity. We provide water. We also have the natural gas distribution system in Barrow. I'll add more here in a little bit. Electric accounts across the region amount to 5,382. I'm here to talk about the residents of the North Slope. As we all know, when people talk about the slope, it's about the large industrial oil and gas complex on the North Slope. It is a national treasure. It's a state treasure. It's something that provides much for the state of Alaska. And I think that it's a wonderful resource for the state. We certainly hope that we can progress here in making assurances that it'll sustain itself for a long period of time. The region's utilities, primary generation are fuel oils, diesel, natural gas, and wind. The natural gas, primarily Barrow, there's, I believe, an outfit in Prudhoe that uses gas. And the wind, of course, is Kotzebue, and of course, some of the villages Mira also mentioned. Kotzebue has been an icon for us in learning how wind can provide us opportunities and benefits for the people that we do serve on the slope and in the region. Key issues, of course, we have a large geographical area. The North Slope alone is larger than the state of Kansas. And then, of course, we add on the northwest region going down south there a bit. It's a large, large area. It geographically differs as well. Of course, we have the Brooks Range there that does separate us a bit. It's generally icebound throughout the winter. There's lack of interconnection, and there are key energy issues, of course. And lack of interconnection is something that is, I think, going to be strongly debated over time, with the cost benefits to it. Mira certainly speaks well of it. It is a difficult thing to consider in our region and our weather and our lack of our road systems. It's something that would be a new type of utility, transmission type utility in our region that we would have to adapt to, and we're strongly looking at that. High cost of oil, of course, the majority of the communities in our region are also dependent on oil. Liquid fuel transportation, all the fuel and energy that's provided for these communities is generally delivered once a year. You get it at a price, and you can sustain utilities with that price throughout the year and have to go year by year on the fluctuations of the market as to what you're going to ultimately be offering the folks within your region. Thermal heating, of course, we have the highest heating degree days in the state. The programs that have been available have been very helpful in assuring the folks that they can manage their budgets and provide for conservation that these days is become more and more important, very, very important. The North Slope State Energy Actions that have helped regions, of course, a renewable energy grant fund that Clay had talked to, power cost equalization, and Northwest Arctic End, my understanding is also on the North Slope. AHFC weatherization and home energy rebate programs. With our region, of course, being recognized as one of the most extreme, not only here in the state, but in the world. These are programs that are much, much beneficial to everyone. And more recently, battery energy storage investigations. And I think this was related to activity at Kotzebue with Barrett Reeve on some new technologies that had come about. I got a little bit of time here. Of course, everyone needs lower costs of energy. We are challenged at many different levels at the complexity of what the cost of oil really represents. And it's very difficult. And I think from a rural perspective, you know, we, and as a, from a utility perspective, we have an obligation to pursue levels of service equitable with everyone in the nation. And it's a very challenging one. And I'd like to speak a bit to that. We have, as you've heard from Corey and Mira, and recognizing Kotzebue, is we are pursuing these alternative energies when they can provide for benefit. It's very difficult and sometimes intangible thing that you have to really put your arms around after you've spent many hours studying them. But on the other hand, too, don't get me wrong, the rural communities have been developing on their own. Barrow, we have used compressed natural gas for over 30 years to power our fleet, long before it became green. In fact, BP has more recently come by to learn from us about how we were able to sustain that part of our utility. And I said, as I said, we're also more like multi-utility. We utilize dual membrane treatment processes for our water. We were first in actually the world to be able to provide to our community dual membrane microfiltration, nanofiltration product to the public. The North Slope Borough at the end of the Barrow Utility System is using a membrane bioreactor as a wastewater treatment plant to treat the wastewater of the community to provide a better quality effluent to the ocean. We use low NOx turbines. We have strived to provide the best service that we can for our folks, and I think people are surprised at some of the forays we made into new technology. We have a high density of operator certification. It's a very strong commitment by utilities to assure that their people that are employed with us have the competency to provide that level of service that we want to be equitable with the rest of the world. I think we'd be good, we are good partners with the state of Alaska, and I think our goals are pretty similar. They're very much aligned for the betterment of our communities, for the strength of our social, economic well-being. And we want to impress that upon you. We want to be good partners. We want to be a resource for you. If you have any comments or concerns about our regions, recognize who a number of us are. Alaska Power Association has been around for quite a while, 60 years. And they do a wonderful job, a great group of folks. And there's one of the philosophies we have up north. And of course, we too have double firm capacity. We have seen some slowdown in the economy. We lost 15% of our peak load in the last decade. It's now slowly coming back up. We're seeing new challenges coming about with open waters, with offshore drilling, with the potential of a lot more industry involved up north. And we all have concerns about how that's going to impact our region, how it's going to impact us environmentally, how it's going to impact us economically, how it's going to impact us through our communities. Is it going to be negative? Is it going to be positive? So, like I say, we do all that we can to provide a level of service equitable with the rest of the world, and that, especially in our region, failure is not an option, and we hope you hold that same philosophy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ben. I'm just going to go through a real quick summary here. First, the managers just want to share the renewable energy goal as 50% statewide. We recognize there are some regions that it's going to be hard to develop any renewable. Some can get close to 100, but that's just a statewide goal. There are socioeconomic benefits. I mentioned the fisheries in our region, but there are a lot of economic stability, psychological things, jobs in our utilities, in our communities, and careers that add a lot of benefit just beyond that cost of energy. Electric infrastructure and generation and transmission and distribution is the most capital intense industry in the world. More than a space program, more than the airline industry, it is an expensive industry and it's a long-term investment and commitment. So one thing we wanted to share with you, the legislature, is how do you prioritize all these projects, all these options and opportunities, and the constantly changing dynamics of fuel prices. and consider what's best for each region. Cost-benefit analysis, that's what we as managers have to do. What's it going to cost? What's the benefit? Seek value investments in energy infrastructure. And hopefully we've shared some success stories from around the state, and we'd like to give you a few minutes at least to ask questions and hope you'll stick around afterwards. We're going to be here, don't have anything scheduled for the next hour. And so maybe I will just moderate a little bit, and if you have a question for a specific region or something, I can pass the mic.
Maybe someone from the audience.
Okay. Or from the audience.
You're getting off pretty light.
I know, you were so
wow.
thorough.
Okay, well, we hope you see that we work together as power plant managers from one end of the state to the other. We're kind of out there on the front lines trying to solve the problems. Our members would say, tomorrow, please. And we work together as a resource, and we want you to see us as a resource. So, thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll have a quick question.
There is a question?
If I could, just a quick question, maybe an opportunity to talk about your upcoming conference when all the utilities come into Juneau in mass in February. I think it might be worthwhile just to spend a second. Maybe.
You bet. I'll let Marilyn talk about that. Or Crystal?
Okay, yeah, February 26th and 27th. Yeah, we have we do an annual legislative fly-in for our members. And come down here, and we'll be over at the Baranoff. We'll have a number of panels where legislators are coming in, administration folks come in and meet with our members. But it's not only the managers that you're seeing here today, but it's also their senior staff, and many of their board members are here too. So you really can get a good idea of what's going on around the state and the different areas. And, you know, as a couple other people have mentioned, you know, it really is putting together a patchwork quilt, and there's different solutions for different areas, and, you know, to use another trite expression, is there's no silver bullet. So, but this is really a good opportunity near the end of February to hear from our members and on what their issues are. So not only we've got the panels, you'll be seeing our members wandering the halls and stopping in at your offices and meeting directly with people, and then I believe it's the first night we have a reception over at the Baranoff too. So, you know, that's a good opportunity to meet with folks too. Any other questions? Well, and again, thank you very much for coming to. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just asking, Crystal. Thank you.
Just wanted to go back. Okay, great. But thank you again for hosting us.
Thank you for lunch.
Great.
That was great.
You're very welcome.
APA provided our lunch today, so.